This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon is away. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
Images of offices once filled with purpose and life, but now frozen in time. Mute memorials to careers spent serving the cause of peace. All this leaves us bewildered and numb.
United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan in New York on Thursday, speaking in tribute to the UN workers killed when a car bomb exploded at UN headquarters in Baghdad. Dan Shore is also away this week. John Parker is the Washington Bureau Chief for The Economist magazine, and he joins us in the studio. John, welcome.
Thank you very much.
John, the two bombings on the same day, one in Iraq, the deadliest attack in UN history, the other on a bus in Jerusalem, altogether dozens dead, hundreds injured.
Yes, Tuesday was one of the worst days for the administration in a very long time, probably the worst for its foreign policy since September the 11th, because these bombs struck at really the two main pillars of that policy, the roadmap in Israel and Palestine, and the attempt to reconstruct Iraq and to build democracy there. But I think that though the two bombs had that in common, I think they were rather different in their impact, and I think it was much worse in Israel probably than it will work out to be in Iraq.
The Israelis responded to the bus bombing with a targeted assassination of a Hamas leader. Do you think that means, are we looking at the start of real war again? Is the roadmap to peace derailed?
It's certainly been derailed for the moment, and I don't know whether how permanent that is or how bad the violence will be in reaction. But at the heart of Bush's policy in Israel was to build a new Palestinian leadership. His notion was that Yasser Arafat was an obstacle to peace, and that if you got a new leadership under Mahmoud Abbas, he'd be more efficient, deliver less corrupt government, which would improve people's lives, and also that he'd begin to confront the terrorists and suicide bombers in the midst of the Palestinian, in the Palestinian midst. And clearly that attempt by Bush has been sidelined. I mean, it's just Hamas called off the truce, Israel's gone back to the targeted assassinations, and Colin Powell this week actually appealed to Yasser Arafat to get back involved in trying to restrain Hamas. I think that's a complete reversal of everything the Bush administration has been trying to do there.
Secretary of State Colin Powell also called on the United Nations and other nations to step in and to send troops to help stabilize Iraq. Do you think that there is a sense possibly in the Bush administration now that greater international cooperation is necessary to win the peace?
Yes, I think they are trying to get other nations more involved. Whether they'll be able to do it, I think, is a bit of an open question, because it depends on how much UN involvement in the sort of management of the process they're willing to allow. So far, they've not been willing to allow very much. It occurred to me about Iraq that, there's been a lot of criticism that somehow the bomb on Tuesday was the result of a U.S. failure there because it had attracted sort of jihadists from outside, and this was the problem now. Of course, we don't really know whether they planted the bomb, and the evidence actually points the other way, that it was to Saddam loyalists at the moment. But just say that they did. It seems to me that that's not so much the evidence of a failure except to provide security. It's more the possibility that America might succeed in Iraq, because the jihadists don't like democracy anywhere. They particularly wouldn't like a democracy to succeed in an Arab country right in the middle of their region. So I think they're responding here by trying to scupper the possibility that America might succeed rather than as a result of America's failures.
One thing that I have found interesting when you talk about, you know, the sort of the first principles of going into Iraq, U.S. policy and so on, is that the U.S. and Britain are dealing very differently with looking back at how we got into this war. Here there has been some criticism of the Bush administration, Democratic candidates and so on, but certainly nothing official. In your home country, however, there is the Hutton inquiry, which is fully underway. Could you tell us what's happening there? I understand the Prime Minister himself may be called to testify.
Yes, the Hutton inquiry is a judicial inquiry into the circumstances of the death and possible suicide of one of the chief Iraq experts in the Ministry of Defense. So it's not actually nominally at any rate, about the bigger question about whether the government had misled the people in presenting intelligence about Iraqi weapons. And the reason the reason that they're looking into this the reason there's a connection is because David Kelly, the name of the person who died, was the source of a BBC report which suggested that the government had willfully exaggerated the intelligence.
Sexed up was the phrase.
Sexed up, as they put it. That's right. Yes, it's been so far a sort of a mixed picture for Blair. I mean, it seems like his government is likely to be exonerated from the worst charges, like that he bullied Kelly into his suicide, or that British intelligence doesn't stand behind the government's dossier about Iraqi weapons, or that the Prime Minister's sort of chief spokesman, Alastair Campbell, you know, gratuitously meddled and rewrote that dossier. But on the other hand, it's also become clear that the Prime Minister's office was deeply involved. There were a lot of political decisions in this rather than purely kind of intelligence decisions. And even if Blair didn't really cross the line in misleading the people, he went pretty close to it when he described the Iraqi threat as current and real. And the fact is that people don't really believe the British government over this. They tend to believe the BBC. There was a poll this week which said that only 6% of the people trusted the government over this issue, not the BBC. So, and that's really the issue that Blair has to tackle when he testifies next week. I mean, he's really in the court of public opinion as much as in the court of the Hutton inquiry.
Well, let's jump from politics there to politics here. The place in this country where it's really hot is California. Is Arnold Schwarzenegger really the man to beat, do you think? Is he going to have an easy time of it in this recall?
I think it'll be quite tough. I think it's becoming more of a two-way race between Schwarzenegger and Cruz Bustamante rather than a complete circus. And the candidates are beginning now to have to put forward sort of serious, specific plans for dealing with the budget hole. And there, Schwarzenegger was a bit woolly, frankly, this week. That's one problem for him. Another problem is the fact that there are a lot of other Republicans on the ballot, and there are pressure to try to get some of those, like Simon, who ran last time against Davis, or possibly Uberoth, the former baseball commissioner, to step down.
Let's take a look at Alabama. 40 years after the March on Washington, civil rights and civil liberties being put to the test in that state, the Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore defied a federal court order to remove a representation of the Ten Commandments from the courthouse.
Yes, it occurs to me that 40 years on from that great march in Washington, which partly came out of events of Alabama, there's been sort of significant symbolic but also kind of slow progress in that state. I mean, 40 years ago we were talking about, you know, church bombings, open discrimination against blacks, and now it's a sort of church-state issue. You know, is he allowed to keep that monument? And then we were also talking about open defiance of the federal government. And now, at least officially, Alabama is bowing to the will. Moore's going to have to take away that monument. Progress happens in curious ways, but the South continues to relive its history in different ways.
John Parker, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
John Parker is the Washington Bureau Chief for The Economist magazine.